Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency.
With gross misconduct, it's got to be the worst possible behaviour. Do we think it's enough to end this guy's employment? What sort of culture is this guy operating in if he's reading emails potentially in the middle of the night?
What emergency measures can prevent this in future? Use your eyes.
Yes, we've got something that fundamentally was a mistake, but then we've got no remorse, no learning points coming from it. And actually they've gone, you know what? Yes, you can all have
I'll do it again. Yeah. I'll do it again tomorrow.
Yeah.
Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal. Reduce legal costs and save yourself from HR headaches with our Heroes software and employment law consultancy services.
What are we talking about today?
We're talking about, I'm not going to curse, but someone that accidentally told their entire company to, rhymes with chuck, off.
Okay.
There you
F
go.
F off.
That's okay. Yeah, I can say
yeah,
that.
We can say F off, yeah.
Nice.
Have we sworn on the podcast before?
I think I probably have.
I think I have, because I mean, my day-to-day vernacular is littered with the offensive, I suppose. So.
You've really grown into that, I feel like.
What, being sweary or being less sweary?
More appropriate cursing.
I think I've got less sweary.
Do you?
Yeah, I think I've got better. I think I'm more aware of it now, so I try not to. Maybe it's because I'm like supposed to be like a boss lady. Maybe I'm supposed to like sound a little bit more grown up.
At least you're trying.
Yeah, so I'm trying.
That's the main thing.
The world loves a tryer.
Let's get this read out, shall we? Hi, Alyssa. I could use some perspective on a tricky situation. One of our employees, Dave, was on a US business trip last week, not sleeping well, dealing with back pain and clearly under stress. He'd been getting a lot of spam calls and scam emails. Out of frustration, he replied to what he thought was another phishing message with...
F off,
yeah. Then reported and blocked the sender. Unfortunately, it turned out that that email was legitimate and it was to the whole company. Even worse, he accidentally hit reply all to over 400 recipients, including the CEO, who now wants him gone. Would you treat this as gross misconduct, a written warning, or a training opportunity given the context?
So it's an interesting one. They're always interesting ones. And they're always Dave, aren't they?
Maybe
we need to work on our anonymous methods, I think.
Yeah, I do. We have a lot of Daves.
But... And I always think that the bad behaviour is always men. It's never women,
yeah,
is
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
they're always Dave.
I'm surprised we haven't picked up for that yet.
Yeah, true. Though now that we've pointed it out, I'm sure someone on TikTok will give us hell for it. But anyway.
Put it in the comments.
Yeah, as usual. Dawn will deal with you. It's fine. it's a reply all situation. So there's a few things to unpick here. We've got someone who, I think you were saying there's some physical health issues, maybe some mental health issues, clearly underworking under a bit of strain, has used very offensive language. And reply all situations. So loads and loads to unpick here, which is what is gross misconduct? What is, you know, enough to say that we've got a total breakdown in trust and confidence in someone, and whether it's enough to justify dismissal, whether it is a training situation, but also potentially some data protection practices here that are going on that we might need to have a chat about.
Yes. Yeah. Why is he in that situation in the first place where he's getting all these emails?
But also the whole, you know, reply all. I mean, I remember when we were, sort of planning the session, because believe it or not, we do plan them. Don't just come on here and just chat rubbish for half an hour. Well, maybe we do chat rubbish for half an hour, but it's planned rubbish. It's a big thing within law firms. One, replying all on chains without realizing that obviously there's lots of people on there and inadvertently releasing attachments out into the wild that shouldn't be. And also when you've got the pre-population in the to field, so you start typing someone's name, you hit return when it's flashed up an email address and actually it's not the right person.
Yeah.
So it's something for solicitors that carries a lot of risk, because if you release obviously confidential information or something that's got advice or financial details or anything like that, you know, I think the last example I saw of this was a wills and probate lawyer who released all the financial details of someone's estate, what someone was going to be inheriting. So the person who was going to be the beneficiary of the inheritance, so it was how much money they were getting across what assets and shares, but it also had their name, date of birth and address.
Who did that go to?
Somebody else.
Oh.
Someone not connected with the estate,
oh,
so someone
dear.
Who knew the name of the individual, their date of birth, address, and how much money they were in line for.
Oh, Christ.
So a huge breach. So things like that can result in, you know, solicitors getting in a lot of trouble, potentially losing their jobs. Mm-hmm. So when I've worked at firms in the past, there's various safeguards that can be put in place. So one, that the auto population's taken off entirely, mm-hmm. which frustrates people because you have to type out email addresses. Or that there's a pop-up that says, is this the right person?
Are you sure?
Are you sure before you send this? So we've got that catch-all. But it's one of the smallest things. It's something that makes our life easy, is reply all and the auto population, mm-hmm. but can be fraught with risk. In this situation, it's led us to the question where we're talking about, is this someone who's guilty of gross misconduct?
It's very dangerous. We've all had been included in them as well.
Actually, you've got a unique name though.
Yeah, I have. So maybe me, I get caught in the reply alls. But yeah, people don't tend to email me by mistake.
No, no.
Most people only know one Alyssa.
Yeah, you're the only Alyssa one, to be fair.
I don't think I've ever met another one.
Really?
To be honest, no, I don't think so.
I think I seen someone on telly the other day called Alyssa, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, there's a famous singer somewhere, I think. Yeah. I think it's an American actress, but I've ever met anyway.
No, I can't think.
But then I think you had one the other day. I think a client...
I had an Ollie.
Yeah, there was someone who copied in the wrong Ollie on something the other day.
I've had it twice in a month. Yeah. But I just delete them. Not that I'm lazy or anything, but if it's not like actually part of my work day or work to do, I'm probably just going to ignore it anyway.
Yeah. Is that what you do with my emails?
Of course not. I take them very seriously.
Anyway, so back to Dave. So in this situation, the data protection stuff, that's just kind of a passing comment, really. It's about, you know, let's be careful about reply all and the pre-population stuff. But what do you think? I'm going to ask you your opinion. Do you think this is gross misconduct? You've done enough of these now. You know kind of how I approach these. And
I know,
you know, when we talk about with gross misconduct, it's got to be the worst possible behaviour. Do we think it's enough to end this guy's employment?
I think it's a very unhappy accident.
Yeah, I'd say so. I don't think it's a situation where we could say that we could never trust this individual again.
No. He just said two words, but he's not like attacked anyone.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's not aimed at anyone. He's just outwardly frustrated.
Yeah. And I think within my client base, there's companies that take offensive language in very different ways.
Mm.
There's somewhere it forms part of everyday language. People don't get offended by the F word. Mm. And they've got a very strong tolerance towards offensive language within their culture. And then you've got some that are very, very, very conservative and actually would be, what did you just say? When someone uses the F word in conversation. If I think about the two different parts of my life, I think if I did it once, I dropped an F-bomb in a board meeting and sort of collective gasp, Alyssa swore.
What, with current board?
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And there was this, oh, we've never heard you swear. Whereas if you came down to the lifeboat station, every other word is the F-bomb.
Mm.
So the tolerance in the two scenarios is very, very different.
Culture thing, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think I'll have to have a look and see if we can link it into maybe some of the descriptions. But I'm sure there was a case recently where there was someone who, there was an instance of offensive language, and either there was a warning that someone then resigned in response to because they said it was an overreaction, or it might have been a dismissal. And the judge made some really interesting comments around the culture of this business and how offensive language was part of the norm. So whether as an outsider you would think that was reasonable or not, that was very much part of their culture. Mm-hmm. And that to discipline someone for it was very much seen to be
Did he have like evidence an exception. Of this? Like the people using words?
I think it was witness evidence to say ultimately, you know, it littered their communications. Okay. It was the sort of thing that was seen as part of normal communication. So I think with this one, yes, even if in the culture of this business, unless we're talking about somewhere that has, you know, very, very strict cultural restrictions, maybe akin to religious, you know, kind of level of standards of behavior, maybe you could potentially say this is very serious, but I'd say you'd have to have some really exceptional reasons to dismiss somebody for dropping an F-bomb in an email, particularly in a situation where it can be seen that this is a mistake. Depending on the context of that email, though, if it was, for example, CEO emails everybody and they're like, we're cancelling Christmas, everybody has to work because of business demand, and he's done a reply all that goes, F off. That could be seen actually as someone who is responding to the CEO and actually being really, really rude about potentially a reasonable management instruction.
Yeah. His opinion on the whole thing.
So I think it's back to that whole, our favourite lawyer response is, it depends.
Mm-hmm.
What's the culture of the business? I would say in this particular situation, was it reasonably obvious that this was someone who was making a mistake? rather than throwing his toys out the pram in response to perhaps an instruction from management. So my answer to HR in this situation would be is we need a bit more detail from you. We need to understand a bit more about what it was that he was responding to. Because if he's replied in frustration to something that they thought was spam, you know, maybe it was like someone circulating a company offer or something. For him to have read it and think, this is spam, it must have been something that's like, employees get a discount of 50% if you buy something on this day. Yeah, that sort of thing, you know? So yeah, we're taking gross misconduct off the table at this point. So now we're going to decide, is it something that we'd issue a warning for? Is it something that we'd go and deliver some training on?
A little bit, backtracking a bit, it mentioned at the start, like he had a back pain and, you know what I mean, stress and what have you. He's been on a long flight. He's been in America. He's a bit out of sorts. Are there any reasonable adjustments for these sort of
potentially
aspects?
So if he is a disabled employee, before we go and dive into disciplinary stuff, we need to think, has his disability impacted on his behavior in this situation? So if he's not sleeping, if he's not, you know, reading things properly, potentially. So it might be that we do treat this as something with a bit more empathy. And I think we've dealt with it on previous pods where we had someone who, because of a disability, was blaming their aggressive behavior.
It was the Asda kid.
Yeah. So we can still have minimum standards of behavior.
Yeah, of course.
Even when disability is a factor. The other side of this potentially linked to disability is, what sort of culture is this guy operating in if he's reading emails potentially in the middle of the night? If he is tired and after travel, that he feels like he has to be checking his messages.
Yes.
So there's two things. One, disability, has it actually impacted what's happened here? But two, if he's had a long flight, he's overworked, he's landed and he's felt he's got to get straight back on it, well, have we put him in a situation where he's so burnt out that he isn't reading emails properly and he's making mistakes?
There's the boots on his neck type thing, yeah.
Yeah.
You don't know, do you? Next question. We're still going from like HR perspective here.
Yeah.
The CEO wants the employee terminated. Where do my legal responsibilities as HR begin and end?
So HR is in a difficult situation when you've got a CEO who's like, I want this person gone. Depending on the character of the CEO and some of the ones that I've worked with within our client base, once their mind is made up, that's very, very difficult to change. And I have seen situations where you've got a CEO who has accepted the decision HR has made, but then that person has a target on their back. Not HR, the individual that they wanted gone. So come hell or high water, they are going to find a reason why they want this person out. They'll make their life very, very difficult. And it's very clear that there then becomes a targeted campaign. So I'd say in this situation, HR's role does extend to explaining, you know, the reasonable responses that a company is expected to make. We can't have this attitude, it's my business, I will do what I want. If you're operating a business within the UK, you have to operate your business within the laws of the UK. So yes, you have your discretion to act as you please within the boundaries of the law. In this situation, if this is an employee who's been there for more than 2 years and this person is removed from the business for gross misconduct, for sending an email, which very clearly is a mistake, the likelihood is the company's going to face a tribunal.
Okay.
HR can also talk about perhaps if that CEO has received advice to the contrary and they go and act anyway, if they're insured in this situation, it could invalidate their insurance, which means the company is going to be paying for that tribunal out of their own pocket and any potential compensation.
Which might be unfair dismissal.
So yeah, they could be looking at up to a year's loss of wages for that individual if they're unable to find work, plus the basic award. Now, the only thing that could potentially work in the favour of the CEO would be the response when the employee has been pulled up on this. If that employee doubles down and goes, I didn't mean to tell everybody to F off, but actually in hindsight, it was a great idea, then we're probably in a situation where we could be looking at this as more serious conduct. Because yes, we've got something that fundamentally was a mistake, but then we've got no remorse, no learning points coming from it. And actually they've gone, you know what? Yes, you can all.
I'll do it again. Do it again tomorrow.
Yeah. So in that situation, we're dealing with a very poor attitude and probably some insubordinate behaviour. Yeah. So that could well help the case. So if you have a difficult CEO and you're thinking, right, well, I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place with this one, it could well be, well, let's pull him up and see what his response is, because he could dig his own grave, for lack of a better word. Or this person could come in full of entire remorse and tell you, look, if I lose my job tomorrow, I can't pay my mortgage. you know, I'm having problems with my wife and we're in financial difficulties. And I've also seen these situations where a CEO goes, I want them out. They sit in the disciplinary meeting, HR fires them, and then CEO goes, oh, I feel a bit sorry for them now.
Well, it's reversed.
Well, then, and then HR goes, well, you told me you wanted him gone. And now you're saying you feel sorry for them. So it is a difficult one for HR to manage. But the approach has got to be make sure that CEO is aware of what the bands of reasonable responses test is. So is this the conduct of a reasonable employer? That let's make the employee aware of what they've done, if they're not already aware, and see what their response to that situation is. Are they full of remorse? Is there mitigation? Are there other things that we need to take into account? Is it consistent with the way that we treat other people? If we have a zero tolerance policy to abusive language in emails and we've dismissed people for it before, then maybe. But if not, and this is going to stand out as being exceptionally harsh, we're going to be at risk. You do sometimes get egos running businesses who thrive on risk and think, well, I've run a business on risk my whole life. You know, don't tell me what risk to take. Tell them how it's going to hit their pocket, how it's going to hit their bottom line, and how it's going to impact potentially their insurance premiums.
You mentioned that, just to backtrack a minute, you mentioned there that like how it's perceived, how this situation might be perceived. With that, would you ever like speak to the workforce about how it came across to them and their opinions on it?
If this has been a reply all.
Yeah.
I would say the most probably reasoned way of responding to this is going to be, if the employee doesn't or isn't already aware, telling them what they've done, expecting an apology off them, and that they respond to the workforce themselves and say, I'm dreadfully sorry. I thought I'd received a spam email, but even so, you should never speak to people in that way. It was totally unprofessional.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of be done with it and close the door on it. And then maybe do a bit of data protection, GDPR, and, you know, email privacy training with the workforce. The difficulty here is the CEO's personality and their expectations.
Absolutely. We'll move on to questions from the employee perspective now. You've just covered it a bit there, but should an apology to those affected be mandatory? Or could that, would it be in person, via email? Because not everyone's going to be, I wouldn't be madly offended.
Most people aren't going to, they might go, oh, that was funny. You know, that's,
yeah, I'd laugh.
That's the reality of the way, and if you make a bigger deal out of it, it draws attention to it as well. So I'd say an email is probably as far as it needs to go. I don't think you need to call everyone together into a town hall to have the employee to stand there and offer most deepest and sincere apologies, you know, for my behaviour. It just makes it look a bit like actually it's someone taking the mic rather than, you know, someone going, actually, you know what, really sorry. By the way, everyone, check it's not reply all, you know, lesson learned sort of thing.
Make a joke of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But no, I don't think we need to go too far. If we make it mandatory, then it's how sincere it is. And again, this is drawing attention or blowing up a situation that probably doesn't need to be made as big as it is. If we're saying an apology to the entire workforce is mandatory and the employee doesn't particularly want to do it, they think that we're blowing it out of proportion and we make them do it anyway, well, how are they going to be talking to their colleagues about it? So when someone goes, oh, I read your apology, mate, and they'll be like, yeah, it was a load of rubbish, they made me do it. You know, it's kind of it's undermining what we're trying to achieve.
Word will soon get round as well. Yeah. Kind of thing, you know what I mean?
Really, we want to show a bit of empathy. So the employee's like, yeah, I've made a bit of a mistake here. Company's been relatively gracious about it. We've learned something from it and we move on. If this person, however, has a bit of a history of behavioural issues, so we have issues with the way that this person speaks to people anyway, perhaps they use an aggressive tone, perhaps they do use offensive language with people when they've asked them not to, then maybe we do start to look at mandatory apologies and warnings. So maybe we could escalate it. But again, it's back to that whole, well, what's the context? If this is someone who is a gold star employee, has never had any behavioural issues, and this is a total one-off, I wouldn't be making such a big deal out of it. But if it's someone where there's been a litany of issues, and this is just one more thing from Dave, well, maybe we do start to go down the warning process.
Context is everything, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really is. Second question from an employee. Do I have grounds for a claim if they do dismiss me with no notice?
Again, favourite lawyer answer, it depends. So if we've got the situation where we've got gold star employee, clean employment history, been there for 2 years, no priors, and we dismiss for gross misconduct based on that, that individual is probably going to have an unfair dismissal claim. If disability is a factor as well, potentially there could be some sort of disability discrimination in there as well. If this is someone who there's been a litany of stuff going on, lots of poor behaviour, there's been maybe complaints about use of offensive language or how they speak to people, you know, no remorse shown, no reflections on their own behaviour, attitude is generally, well, it's happened, what are you going to do? maybe they've already got a warning or two on file. Potentially, I still don't think I'd be going for summary dismissal with no notice. So you can, you've got the option of gross misconduct dismissal, dismissal with no notice, so what we call summary dismissal, mm-hmm. where they leave immediately, they don't get paid a notice payment. But then you have got kind of like a micro step down where we're still dismissing, saying your employment is going to end because of behaviour, but we are going to pay you notice.
Okay.
So they actually get that, the notice payment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not quite as severe as right. the full-blown gross misconduct summary dismissal. They're still getting something on their way out. And it's a useful tool sometimes where it is one of those borderline cases. And sometimes when you think about it from an emotional perspective with an employee, if you end someone's employment immediately and they've got no notice, you know, does what it says on the tin. Their employment is ending with no notice. They have had no notice. Their financial circumstances are going to change overnight.
Bad feeling, eh?
It is. And panic often.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes that can drive that, well, I need to do something about this because I need to secure my financial future, particularly with people who've got 2-3 month notice periods that could provide them with a bit of cushioning. So if you've got something that's borderline and you think we just can't see how we can bring them back in, but equally dismissal without notice feels very harsh, dismissal with notice can sometimes take the steam out of that dismissal a little bit. And it stops that immediate emotional reaction to a dismissal, particularly if they're getting a 2-3 month notice period out of it.
Mm. My first job I ever had, it was an apprenticeship back when they did them. And I was like let go after 6 months, but I was let go like on the day
mm-hmm.
of the 6 month deadline.
Yeah.
So it was like they could extend it for 6 more months or let me go. And it was like 9:30 in the morning. I was right lost after that, you know.
Yeah.
I was 18. I walked out and I was like, what do I do now? I went for a walk in woods. Not like it sounds depressing, but it was good. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
Yeah, what do you? That was I like experienced like shock, panic.
Yeah. That's so take that situation, but there's wife, kids, 2 cars, mortgage.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's you know 2 days before payday.
I were at home with mum and dad. You know, yeah. I was living fine. I panicked then. Sorry, one more a little bit of a sidetrack here. We've got a note. Dawn's put the note. Little hypothetical.
Mm-hmm.
What if this email sent to a client? And they leave, would this case be hit by a flying SOSR?
Ah, your favourite.
Yes.
Yeah, and look at you calling it by its proper name.
Not the saucer.
The days of saucer are gone. It's a really good question because if this were to have gone to a client and client goes, that's it, I am grossly offended by what's happened. Even if the client is being hypersensitive maybe and says, I am removing my business from your business. So you've lost, you know, again, depending on size of client, say we lose it, you know, 10% of our income off the back of losing this client.
Mm-hmm.
And when we go and try and appease said client, they're saying, okay, we'll come back, but only if that person is removed from your business.
Oh.
Now, in a situation where you've got a client making a demand like that,
mm-hmm.
a judge won't just say, well, the client told you to do it, so it's fine. You're expected to still be reasonable. So if there's a situation, and there was one I dealt with where actually this company essentially had one large client. They'd have had to go out and re-tender for other work if they lost this client.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty reasonable. Even if the client is being fundamentally unreasonable, if they are going to remove their entire resources and you can end up making everyone in the business redundant, the lesser of the two evils is to lose, you're sacrificing the one to save the many.
Yes, yeah.
If actually the client's a bit inconsequential, we can live without them.
Mm-hmm.
And they are being massively unreasonable. And actually, we could just reallocate that person to another account. We don't need to remove them from the business.
Mm-hmm.
Removal could be seen as unreasonable. And that would potentially be an unfair dismissal. So again, it's our favorite. It depends. But it's a classic SOSR sort of context is where a major or an important or an influential client has demanded the removal of somebody. And in a business that's small enough that they can't be redeployed somewhere else, it can sometimes be the only option. If the client hasn't actually made any demands, but you've lost their business as a result, so the consequences of the behaviour have been so serious, and you do your investigation and you realise actually this is the last act in a series of things where this client has been offended by this individual, then yes, potentially it could be something that you could look at as gross misconduct because of the severity of the consequences and particularly if that was foreseeable. So if this person has fundamentally over time destroyed that relationship and this is the final straw, that one small innocuous act
is enough.
Could potentially be enough.
I'd find it, I'm coming from like an employee perspective obviously, but if a big company lobbied for the like the removal of an employee from a business, I'd find it quite distasteful. Regardless,
it happens.
Yeah, I can imagine it does.
I mean, for your ego, it'd be quite cool, though. I suppose, like they're that bothered that they'll take their business elsewhere. But I think to clarify on that last point as well about the final innocuous event, and this is something that I, when I'm advising HR, when I'm saying we need to be very specific about what we're accusing somebody of, is that allegation, from my perspective, wouldn't just be you swore at a client. It would be that your conduct over a period was of such a negative approach that it has resulted in the loss of a client. So what you do is you'd capture their entire behavior, not just you swore at somebody. Because really, we're not accusing them of that. What we're accusing them of is consistent behavior that has destroyed the relationship with the client. So if we only accuse them of swearing at a client, that could potentially be an unfair dismissal because we haven't actually just dismissed them for that. It's the fact that they're chain of events of behavior has led to that point.
Need evidence of previous.
Yeah. So we'd need to be very, very specific with our allegation and make sure that we're not just capturing the obvious, that it's actually what is in our mind at the time we're saying this person has done something wrong, is it's the entire picture of their behavior, not just this final event.
Absolutely. Closing sort of question and thoughts. What emergency measures can prevent this in future? Apart, use your eyes. Check who you send an email to.
Yeah, look before you send. Absolutely. Isn't it? You know, we don't just click, which is very easy to do. I do it, not so much necessarily with emails, but so I've got a client who doesn't use Teams. I think it's Google Meets that they use, or maybe another platform. And you know when you get loads of pop-ups on the way in and you're like, whatever. Yeah. And there was one that came up and it was basically, do you want to stop this application from ever being able to use your microphone and camera? And I'd hit yes. Could I undo that? I thought I was going to have to like delete everything on my computer and start again just because I didn't read the pop-up properly. I was just like, oh, just get me in the meeting.
Spamming through, yeah.
Look before we click. Make sure, employees have done their data protection, their privacy training. Because actually, if this guy hasn't been put through any of that training, doesn't understand the risks about, you know, hitting reply all or whatever, I've got family members, older family members that do it. You know, when they put things on social media or they reply to emails or they reply to spam, my husband and I have a process now where before he clicks on things, he screenshots it and sends it to me and I go thumbs up or thumbs down.
Well, anything? Or is it like things that he's not
unsure anything.
Of?
I mean, I don't micromanage his entire life. Maybe I do. No, I don't micromanage his entire life.
Can we do the shopping at
but like,
this week,
he'll, like, there was one the other day that looked like it was from HMRC.
Okay.
In a text message. And I was like, do not open that.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know when you get the pop-up with the little message and he's like, yeah, but it says that they're going to do something. I'm like, no, HMRC are not going to text you. Do not open that text message. Just delete it. So anything like that where I'm like, if it looks too good to be true or if it's someone threatening you with something, screenshot it and we will check it together.
We
don't click on things. Purely because I'm tech support in my family and I don't have time to eradicate 1,000 viruses or, you know, lock down and change everyone's passwords. So the basic training around email security, privacy, data protection, all that sort of stuff is a really good starting point. If this is something that's become a routine issue and you think, actually, you know, everyone's found this very, very funny, but now I'm realizing everybody uses F-bombs all the time and our culture's a bit, you know, in the sewer. Well, let's have a look at how we can improve that culture about how people communicate. Policies is always a good one as well, because if we don't have a policy around offensive language, I mean, not that I hate litigating for everything, but if something is a problem and it's something you're going to start disciplining people for, you really need to have that standard of behavior written down.
You need a framework down there.
Yeah. And managing our CEO's expectations around what we can do with disciplinary policies and what we can't.
Okay. The offensive language policy is crazy to me.
Oh, like, I've seen some crazy. Maybe we could do a pod on like the most kind of astonishing policies I've ever seen. Because there's so like people, and they will. The minute there's an issue kind of with one thing, one person or one, even if something hasn't actually happened, they think, well, this could happen. Let's write a policy for it. And you end up with handbooks that are like inches thick. Really, you cover the basics, maybe have a code of conduct around behavior, but it's only then when something is going to operationally cause issues or maybe present some risk and we're going beyond expecting people to use common sense.
At what point is it like babysitting? Really?
Yeah.
Like you should know what to say and what not to say by the time you're an adult.
Yeah, I think I'm going to find my sort of favourite pet hates, I think.
That'd be good. If we can I don't know if we'll be allowed to, but if we can go through like excerpts of some policies, you know, and just like laugh at them.
Yeah, that'd be good.
That would not be offensive to people at all.
Well, we're not going to name the companies they've come from or who's written them.
Aren't we?
I'll have to check I haven't written them first. Because I get asked to write them and I'm like, really? Really? Do we need a policy on this?
I don't want to put
Do we need a
this.
Whole policy on this, or maybe we can just have a line in the code of conduct?
Oh, I don't know. Seems a bit overkill to me, but yeah. I'm not the expert, am I?
You're getting there. You've asked some very insightful questions today.
Bloody hell, it's a change, isn't it?
Said it, not me.
Makes a change. Anything else to add?
I think we've covered it all.
But yeah, thanks for watching, everybody. Like, comment, subscribe. Cheers.
Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media or even HRER@heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect. But by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier, and more productive workplaces.